Merci, Madame la Présidente.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My greetings to the delegation of Ireland. I thank them for being here with us today. I welcome the fact that it's a high-level delegation, and we hope that we will have a very constructive dialogue around a number of important issues that were raised in the list of issues submitted to the State Party. Today, I wish to raise issues 2 and 5. Number 2, first of all, this relates to the Irish Commission of Human Rights and Equality. I read the State Party report very carefully, and I also very carefully considered the State Party's reply to the list of issues. And my conclusion, having perused these documents, is that the Irish Commission on Human Rights and Equality fulfills its mission appropriately. It benefits from A status, which means it is entirely compliant with the Paris Principles. There is a constant increase to the funds allocated to this commission, according to what the delegation has told us. There's a total amount of about 32 million euro allocated to the commission between 2015 and 2019, and its annual budget has increased. And in 2020, reached approximately 6.7 million. In 2022, this amount increased to 7.5 million euro. So in terms of the financial allocations and the operations of the committee, I believe that everything is exactly as it should be. But I do have questions. I would like to ask about the mandate of commissions of this kind. And normally, they have the possibility of visiting places of detention. So my question is whether the Irish Commission on Human Rights has the possibility in law to monitor places of detention, such as prisons. Can it, for example, carry out visits with spot visits that there is no prior notification of? And what is the impact of the activity of the commission on individual complaints, the complaints of individuals that are alleging violations of their human rights? And what is the role of the Commission on providing assistance to victims and on assisting them in representation to the courts? I move on now to issue number 5. Now, this is an issue which was already addressed in previous human rights recommendations. It relates to the operations mentioned earlier by Ms. Tigruja. These are symphysiotomies, which were conducted between 1944 and 1987 on 1,500 women. These were carried out without their consent and with no prosecution of the doctors that carried out these procedures. These are procedures that were very harmful for the women concerned, because they experience severe psychological and physical consequences as a result of the symphysiotomies. In its answers, the State Party emphasizes that there was an investigation of these facts and that these led to 3 independent reports, the Walsh, Murphy, and Clark reports, which were drafted between 2013 and 2016. So it's very good that the investigations were carried out and the reports produced. But the question I would like to ask is, how can you explain this very long delay between the facts as they occurred and the reports which were produced so late in the day? So that is the first question. Secondly, the women victims and the report, in fact, tell us that there were 399 women that benefited from compensation which the total of which was 29.8 million euro. We also hear that they benefited from free medical services, which were sufficient. And according to the European Court on Human Rights, these satisfied all obligations of redress. So my question is, 399 women only out of 1,500, why so few? And the families of the victims themselves, did they receive any compensation? My final question, the Murphy report, the Clark report, and the High Court emphasize that it's not possible for a court to consider it necessary to obtain the informed consent of a patient whose life is in danger as a result of a real barrier that occurs during the process of giving birth. So the idea is that it is not possible to obtain such consent because the women are not able to give it, and in fact the whole question is to save their life. So according to the Murphy report, these procedures were justified or had a justification, and it cannot be considered that the obstetricians that had carried out the procedures at the time should be punished today. They did, in other words, what it was possible for them to do at the time and respected their medical code of ethics to some extent. So the question that I would like to ask now, given all of this, is not resorting to cesarean sections, for example, which were practiced at the time, was that choice due to religious reasons? There were very many victims of these symphysiotomy procedures. So were there any religious reasons underlying the decision to perform this procedure rather than others? It is true that the State Party has made progress in terms of investigation, but there is still the persisting question of immunity or impunity. So there is still a question of impunity for the